Ukraine will never be a victory for Russia.
Week 5 of War in Ukraine. It's Tuesday, March 29th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, food insecurity in Ukraine. Afghan girls want education. Marketing wine to China. Australians' carbon abatement question. Recapping the Academy Awards. It's all on today's VOA Asia. A fifth week of unprovoked war waged by Russia on neighboring Ukraine. More than 10 million Ukrainians are now displaced both in and outside the country. Russian shelling continues throughout Ukraine despite the Kremlin announcing new battle plans focused on the eastern region. On a trip to Europe, U.S. President Joe Biden said Russian President Vladimir Putin cannot remain in power, but later U.S. officials clarified that Washington is not seeking regime change. VOA's Arash Arbasadi has this story.
A salvo of caliber cruise missiles launched from the Black Sea in the south of Ukraine as Russia's war on its neighbor enters a second month. The Russian Defense Ministry claims it fired upon infrastructure of the Ukrainian armed forces. Meanwhile, in the Ukrainian city of Lviv, firefighters work to extinguish a blaze at fuel storage facilities hit by Russian cruise missiles. The next day, people seek comfort and prayer at Lviv's Church of the Holy Eucharist. Russia's invasion of Ukraine was the focus of a speech delivered by President Joe Biden in Poland's capital, Warsaw, on Saturday.
Ukraine will never be a victory for Russia, for free people refused to live in a world of hopelessness and darkness. We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principle, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom and possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain in power.
The president's speech capped a four-day trip to Europe where he visited members of the 82nd Airborne Division and Ukrainian refugees in Poland. The White House later clarified his off-the-script comments, saying Biden was not advocating regime change in Moscow, and other U.S. officials made clear Sunday that is not Washington's policy. Sunday on CNN's State of the Union, Republican Senator James Risch described the president's ad-libbed closing of his speech as unfortunate.
Anytime you say, or even as he did, suggest the policy was regime change, it's going to cause a huge problem. This administration has done everything they can to stop escalating. There's not a whole lot more you can do to escalate than to call for regime change.
Others say Biden's remark at the end of his speech about Putin should not be the focus. Sunday on ABC's This Week, former CIA director and retired General David Petraeus said the focus should be on further strengthening NATO and not a few words from a speech.
This should not overshadow what was an extraordinarily important and successful trip to Europe, one that the U.S. really led, as it has done so impressively, really, throughout this entire effort, and pulled together, guided, and then ultimately with this speech that did. It was a very, very strong statement, obviously.
As Russian shelling continues, thick smoke fills the air in destroyed residential areas on the outskirts of Kyiv. Sunday on ABC's This Week, Ukraine's Deputy Prime Minister Olga Stefanishnya talked about what her country needs.
Everybody should be concentrated over one goal, to make sure that Ukraine is capable, financially stable, to resist and defend until the political solution, how to restore the territorial integrity of Ukraine and a peace around Europe, is there.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, in an address, echoed calls for tanks, armored vehicles, and jets. He compared the Russian invasion to the way Nazis tried to conquer Europe 80 years ago, adding that no one will forgive them. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Philippines and U.S. hold biggest military exercises in 7 years. Chinese court to try Chinese-Australian journalists next week. Myanmar Army says it will annihilate coup opponents on crackdown anniversary. UN Security Council asked Taliban to allow Afghan girls to attend school. With eye to China investment, Taliban now preserve Buddhas. find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Tuesday. The World Food Program warns food is getting harder to find in Ukraine as the war grinds on, forcing people to resort to extreme measures. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Ukraine, a country of 44 million people, is running out of food. The World Food Program estimates 45% of the country's people are worried about finding enough to eat. WFP calls the country's food supply chain broken. Spokesman Thompson Feary says the systems to feed the tens of millions of people trapped inside Ukraine are falling apart.
WFP estimates that one out of five people in Ukraine today are already using some food coping strategies. It is getting desperate. Desperate times are calling for desperate measures. They are reducing food portions. They are reducing the number of meals they consume. Adults are sacrificing the meal so that the kids have something to put in their bellies.
UNICEF says 4.3 million children, more than half of the country's child population, have been displaced since Russia invaded. The Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, which documents war casualties, says children account for at least 78 of the more than 1,080 people known to have been killed. Aid agencies say relentless Russian bombing has destroyed residential areas, civilian infrastructure, more than 70 healthcare facilities, airports, and bridges. Fieri says supermarkets are empty and warehouses drained of food stocks. He says families in embattled areas are having greater problems finding food, especially in the eastern Ukrainian city of Mariupol, which has been nearly razed to the ground.
Lack of access to conflict-hit areas and a lack of humanitarian partners on the ground are the biggest obstacles to providing life-saving assistance to families inside of Ukraine. The encircled city of Mariupol is running out of its last reserves of food and water. No humanitarian aid has been allowed into the city since it was encircled on 24th of February.
Fieri says WFP has deployed enough food supplies to assist 3 million people inside Ukraine for a month. He says the agency is stockpiling food in several areas of the country in anticipation of escalating fighting in some major cities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still to come on VOA Asia, Afghanistan's Taliban rulers break a promise to allow girls to attend school. Happening now in Asia, China locked down the city of Shanghai on Monday to try to contain a growing coronavirus outbreak, as questions are raised about the economic toll of the nation's zero COVID strategy. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Tens of thousands of Afghan girls had their hopes dashed last week when the Taliban government abruptly reversed its decision to allow them to attend secondary school. They were sent home after just a few hours in class, as VOA's Wahid Faizi reports.
The Taliban's decision to bar Afghan girls from attending secondary school is estimated to affect up to 1 million girls in the country. Officials said the schools will remain closed until they come up with plans to reopen in accordance with Islamic law. The move just after classes began led to tears of hopelessness and disappointment as female students in secondary schools were told to return home.
We were in the third hour of our class when our teacher came and said, "The Taliban are not allowing you to study. What is our fault? I am a girl. This is my fault?" We were told to go home, and the school was closed.
Earlier in the week, the Ministry of Education said schools and classes for girls from the sixth grade and up would be open on Wednesday. Now students say they have been told they cannot continue their education until further notice. dashing their aspiration to continue their education.
I hope that the schools are open for girls as soon as possible and that the girls are given their rights.
In Islam, seeking knowledge is compulsory for every Muslim man and woman. Then how can they justify telling us that wearing the hijab, praying and fasting is compulsory and not seeking knowledge? What is our fault? God created us as girls. It was the worst day of my life.
A Taliban education ministry spokesperson did not specify whether the girls would be allowed to attend school in the future, but he did say the girls' tears are saddening to them.
We value each Afghan girl's tears. Each drop of their tears is like the drops of the entire nation's blood. But we, as the employees of the Islamic Emirate, do not have decision-making powers in such issues. We can only share the position of the education ministry with you. The decisions are with the leaders of our government.
The Taliban have been in power in Afghanistan since last August and had promised to work on a plan for the opening of girls' schools in the country. It is a promise they failed to keep when they first ruled the country over two decades ago and never allowed girls to attend school. Wahid Faizi, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The Australian and New Zealand Prime Ministers voiced concerns about the potential for a Chinese military presence on the Solomon Islands after a document leaked last week that indicates China could boost its military presence in the South Pacific Island nation. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. The future for South African wines in China is looking rosé after Beijing slapped huge tariffs on Australian exports amid a diplomatic row. Now South Africa winemakers are creating vintages tailored for the Chinese market. Kate Bartlett reports for VOA from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Winemakers in the rolling green vineyards of the Western Cape in South Africa knew an opportunity had arrived when China slapped a 212% tariff on Australian wines. The cause? Disagreement over the origins of COVID-19 in 2020. Marcus Ford is the Asia Market Manager for Wines of South Africa, which represents all local winemakers.
And since then, merchants who were dealing in Australian wine have been looking for other alternatives, and South Africa is a very obvious place to go. And we've benefited dramatically in the past 12 months. So our exports to China have doubled over that period, and the momentum looks to be strong.
South Africa shipped $31 million worth of wine to China, a 59% increase from the previous year. One company that's benefited is AM Vineyards. They're even making their own blend, catering specifically to the Chinese palate, says co-owner Matthew Karen.
We wanted to satisfy the Chinese palate, and that took quite a lot of getting to know the market, talking to sommeliers, getting to really understand what really works well in the market, and then developing a South African product that is made for Chinese palates.
Chinese wine connoisseurs prefer mainly red wines, red being a lucky color in Chinese culture. They also favor corks over screw caps and like fancy packaging. However, tastes are changing and the Chinese market is still quite young, says Ford.
You could say that in the north of China, which has a relatively robust appetite for alcohol and strong alcohol, there's a preference for rich, heavy red wines. And in the south, there's more openness to lighter styles and white wines. There's a younger generation who've embraced white wines, sparkling wines.
Yang Liu, China's first and only master sommelier, says it's hard to generalize about a Chinese palate for a country of over a billion people.
I don't think there's actually a Chinese palate in this. China is so huge. The taste of people, just like a Chinese food, are so diverse.
In the past 6 months, more large retailers in China, like Walmart and Sam's Club, have started stocking South African wines.
It just reached a stage that the general public, we are looking for more diversity in terms of style, country, varieties. And naturally, being one of the most important wine-producing countries in the world, South Africa came into the picture.
The pandemic has caused difficulties. Restrictions and lockdowns in China mean there's been less demand, with restaurants and supermarkets shuttered and people staying home.
I think the biggest impact, in the short term at least, will be supply chain problems with ports and you know, customs facilities and those sorts of things being impacted. So there'll be some disruption from a logistics perspective.
But despite some hurdles ahead, the popularity of South African wines in China looks likely to grow. For VOA News, Kate Bartlett, Johannesburg.
Making headlines in Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said the country will continue to develop formidable striking capabilities that cannot be bartered or sold for anything, according to state media on Monday, as they showed him visiting workers involved with the country's latest and biggest missile test. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. New research has claimed that much of Australia's multi-billion dollar carbon abatement scheme is fraudulent. It is alleged that up to 80% of so-called carbon credits are issued to projects that do not have environmental integrity. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney for VOA.
Australia's 11-year-old carbon credit scheme aims to reward farmers, landholders and other businesses to store carbon in trees, the soil, or to use different methods to cut emissions. For every ton of greenhouse gases stored or prevented, projects registered under Australia's official $3.4 billion emissions reduction fund receive a carbon credit. The credit is essentially a certificate or permit, allowing the holder to emit a ton of greenhouse gas. Most credits have been bought by the government in Canberra, while a growing number are privately traded by companies wanting to offset their own emissions. However, new research has uncovered alleged widespread inconsistencies in the system. The study was undertaken by Australian National University law professor Andrew McIntosh, who was involved in the development of the initial scheme. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that most of the credits don't represent a real or extra carbon abatement.
What we've got happening at the moment is a collection of things across a range of methods, issuing credits to not clear forests that were never going to be cleared, to issue credits for growing trees that simply aren't there, or issuing credits for growing trees that are already there, or in the case of that landfill gas, giving people credits for capturing and combusting methane in circumstances where it would have been done anyway because it's commercially viable to do it.
McIntosh has called for the entire program to be scrapped and for the process to start again from scratch. In response, Australia's clean energy regulator, which runs the initiative, said it would assess the research. It has, however, insisted the projects it manages are carefully monitored. The regulator rejected assertions in the study that between 70 to 80% of the carbon credits issued were essentially worthless. Australia's centre-right government pledged last year to deliver net zero emissions by 2050 in a practical, responsible way while preserving Australian jobs and generating new opportunities for industries. Campaigners, however, have argued that the government's strong support for the fossil fuel industries is environmentally irresponsible. Australia has high rates of per capita emissions, in large part because of its reliance on coal for much of its electricity generation. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Finally on VOA Asia, the 94th Academy Award ceremony ended in a climactic way, giving the Oscar for Best Picture to Coda, a seeming underdog that celebrated deaf representation. Other highlights included an unexpected scuffle and women sweeping the Oscars for Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, and Best Song. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
In a David versus Goliath story, the coming-of-age film Coda, a heart-rending story, with only three Oscar nominations, beat Academy frontrunners in the Best Picture category. Meanwhile, the Western psychological drama The Power of the Dog, a seeming favorite with 12 Oscar nominations, took away one Oscar for Best Director. Coda, a feature film about a deaf family, won audiences' hearts and spread awareness on deaf culture. The film centers on Ruby, a 17-year-old, helping her deaf family communicate with the hearing world and keep the family business afloat. Ruby loves to sing and dreams of going off to college to study music. Her dream seems to clash with her love and duty toward her family. Coda gained traction among Academy voters as a landmark feature film on deaf representation. Also, for the first time since 1986, when deaf actress Marlee Matlin won an Oscar for Best Actress for her role in Children of a Lesser God, her co-star in Coda, Troy Kotsur, won the Oscar in the Supporting Actor category, the second deaf actor ever to win an Oscar. During his acceptance speech, he hailed his award as a moment representing everyone in the deaf community. Coda filmmaker and writer Sean Hader won the Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay. Jane Campion nabbed the Oscar for Best Director for The Power of the Dog. The New Zealand filmmaker is the third female director to win an Oscar after Chloe Zhao and Catherine Bigelow. Will Smith received his first Academy Award in the Best Actor category for his performance in the sports drama King Richard as the tenacious Richard Williams, the father and tennis coach of iconic tennis players Venus and Serena Williams. In his acceptance speech, a tearful Smith called Richard Williams a fierce defender of his family. Smith appeared clearly shaken after his altercation with presenter Chris Rock when the latter insulted Smith's wife. Will Smith apologized to the Academy and to the nominees. Jessica Chastain received her first Oscar in the Best Actress category for her performance as American evangelist Tammy Faye Baker in the film drama The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Chastain also produced the film. In another first, Ariana DeBose took home the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for her performance in Steven Spielberg's West Side Story. She's the first queer woman of color to win an acting Oscar. She's also the second Latina to win an Oscar. The first was Rita Moreno, who won an Oscar for the same role of Anita 60 years ago in the original film version of West Side Story. Disney's Encanto is the first animated feature celebrating Latino characters to win an Oscar. The film features songs written by Lin-Manuel Miranda. Denis Villeneuve's epic science fiction film, Dune, took home six Oscars for Best Cinematography by Greg Fraser, Visual Effects, Sound, Film Editing, Production Design and Original Score by Hans Zimmer. Belfast, a heartwarming story by filmmaker Kenneth Branagh about finding joy in the middle of violence during the time of Troubles in Belfast, Ireland, won the Oscar in the category of Best Original Screenplay. I should have known. The Oscar for Best Song went to Billie Eilish for the James Bond film No Time to Die, a fitting award since the 1904 Academy Awards celebrated the 60th anniversary of James Bond. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's all for VOA Asia. Find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at VOAnews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Snow. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Bye now.